Hey, welcome to the Strong Her Way to Eat, Move, and Live. Here we talk all things food freedom, fitness, and life transformation, helping you heal your relationship to food, exercise, your body, and ultimately yourself. I am so excited about the conversation that we are having today. I am actually joined by Omega Zumpano. Her and I connected through Instagram. So as much as I have feelings about social media, I do also know that there are some great things that can potentially happen there. And this relationship was one of those. I've really enjoyed learning from Omega in the work that she's doing, particularly around cycle syncing and how we can really make nutrition choices or exercise choices to support the different phases of our cycle. So I will be sure to have all of her information in the show notes so that you can check out her YouTube videos because those are great. But we are actually having a very different conversation today. So in her and I chatting, we realized that we both had a similar background with the figure competition world or competing. And it sounds like we kind of had some similar struggles, some similar things sort of come as kind of the aftermath of competing. And so we wanted to just have a very open and candid conversation around that experience. And then also kind of some of the trends that we see in the fitness world right now with really just promoting some of those behaviors that oftentimes, I mean, they are very extreme, can definitely lead to some obsessive behavior. So let's go ahead and get Omega here to introduce herself. So why don't you go ahead and give us an introduction?
Yeah, thank you for that warm introduction, Alicia. I super appreciate that. So like Alicia said, I do have a history in bikini competitions. I started bikini competitions before, I started bodybuilding competitions before there was a bikini category. And that's how I started. And that was my inlet into the fitness world. And I will go much more into detail. I'm sure Alicia will help me do that. But I ended up getting hypothyroid syndrome, adrenal fatigue. I lost my period for 6 years. And since then, I have reclaimed my period, gotten it back, and I'm teaching other people how to work with their cycle. I'm teaching personal trainers how to work with their client cycle so that we can all experience more freedom and empowerment through our menstrual cycle. And that is my jam.
Well, I love it because I feel like at least when I was growing up with regards to the period, that was kind of just this thing that, you know, we knew as women, oh, we just have to go through this. There's going to be like a week where we just feel really crappy. And it was kind of this hidden, dirty little thing that we didn't talk about. And I am definitely thankful that the conversation there is starting to shift a little bit. However, I do feel like there are so many women out there that still kind of have that perspective on the period. And for some women, you know, they feel like they only feel good for about a week out of the month. And so I'm super grateful for you and other pioneers in our industry that are really kind of changing the narrative, if you will, around the period and really, I guess, just equipping us and teaching us as women how to harness the power of our hormones and really work with our bodies in the different cycles. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing. I definitely enjoy
my joy.
So switching gears, I would love to hear kind of how, so it sounds like doing the bikini competition was sort of your gateway into the fitness world. So what, I guess, inspired you to get on stage in a bikini? For most of us, well, we're like, well, we don't even want to go out to the beach in a bikini, let alone get on a stage with some heels.
Yeah, I mean, it was like so multifaceted. Like we can go into the psychology of it, but the basics was like, I grew up in a bodybuilding family. We went to the gym for fun together as a family. And when I was 16, as soon as I could drive, I would wake up at 5 a.m., hit the gym before school, and then go to school and do my thing. And my father owned a sports nutrition company. So that's why I say like, we grew up with bodybuilders around us. Like our aunties and uncles. Like, that's what everybody did. So when I turned 18, I was like, oh, this is what I'm going to do, because these are the role models that I have. And in some ways, they were displaying healthy behavior. And as you and I both know, in other ways, it's like the antithesis of unhealthy behavior and the antithesis of having poor relationships with our bodies. So what inspired me to get on stage was that it was just the thing to do in our family.
Yeah, that's super interesting that you grew up in that culture, because that was definitely not my experience. I always joke that running was sort of my gateway into the fitness space. And mm-hmm. I didn't love running at the time, but I loved that really was the first place in my life that I was able to kind of break some glass ceilings, or really break kind of some of the limiting beliefs that I had about myself. Cause I would have been like, I'm not a runner. I'm just not a very fit person. You know, I just had kind of that story about myself. And so naturally, of course, my behaviors reflected what I most believed about myself. And so for me, running was really that opportunity, or that first time that I could tangibly see I'm breaking down these barriers. And so that is one of the things, you know, that even as I went to compete in a figure show or a couple figure shows, again, that was just another opportunity to kind of push the bounds, I guess, of what I thought I was capable of. So I don't want this to be, you know, I don't want you guys to think that we're just totally bashing fitness competitions and all of these things, because there's so many great things that came out of it. But like you pointed out, on the surface, a lot of the behaviors look really healthy, right? These are people that are working out a lot. They're usually pretty clean so it's like a lot of like pretty healthy foods, whole food based most of the time. But then there are definitely some unhealthy behaviors, you know, the mental and emotional aspect to their relationship to exercise, to food, to your body. And really those were the things that I noticed, not so much during, but definitely afterwards, was like the body obsession, the fear of gaining weight after stepping on stage. So why don't you kind of walk us through that show for you, or like, how long did you compete?
Yeah, I competed on and off from the ages of 19 was my first competition, to 28. So it was a fairly long time. And in between that time is when I got diagnosed with hypothyroid syndrome. So the third competition, I think it was like the third or fourth competition that I did, I was picked up by a coach, and that coach offered me free training. All of his girls were in the winner's circle. So I was like, oh my gosh, yes. Like, I want to train with this coach. And I did it. And, you know, the experience was that where I was eating the same thing for 16 weeks, the same thing every single day. And I'm the type of person, like, if an educator tells me to do something because it's going to get me to my goal, I am like, I will follow every step without fail. So I ate the same thing every day for 16 weeks. I worked out the same way every week for 16 weeks. And at that point, because of training, I had already lost my cycle. And when I lost my cycle, everybody was telling me, it's fine. You're so lean. Like, you don't actually need a cycle. And I was like, okay, like, all the people that I'm looking up to are telling me that it's fine. So I'm like, no problem. And then after like my fourth or fifth show, this was when I was about 21. I was like, I went to nationals. I won third at nationals. It was a qualifier show. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be in this pro show. I'm going to compete here, but I'm going to take a break first. I'm going to take like a 6-month break. And then I started gaining weight. And as you say, like, the fear of gaining weight is so, so strong with some people. Myself was one of those people. And so I ended up gaining 30 pounds in 3 months. Do that math with me, 30 pounds in 3 months. Like, it was my worst nightmare personally. And I stepped on stage at like 111 pounds. And then I, at the 3 month marker, maybe later than that, I was 163 pounds. So that's more than 30 pounds in 3 months. But I remember seeing 163 on the scale and being like, what's going on? At that point, I had already been diagnosed with hypothyroid syndrome. I was on medication. I was still on medication then. And it was tragic for me because I thought I'd lost, I was a personal trainer at the time too. I left personal training because I was just shattered. Like, no one is going to take advice from me now. Like, no one's going to look at me as a personal trainer. I can't even control being a keyword there, what my own body is doing. And so from there, I gained a bunch of weight, and then I slowly started losing weight. And as I look back on it now, like, you and I being like health professionals know that like the body needs to, the pendulum swings sometimes in the body, right? If we're underweight, sometimes we have to gain more weight than is comfortable to then get back to a baseline, a homeostasis that our body is happy with. So that's what ended up happening. And then, foolish me, I went on stage again and again. And same thing happened. I gained weight. I did test my hormones at that time. My testosterone was a little high. I wasn't super hypothyroid in the functional lab measurement. And then after my last show at 28, I was like, this isn't healthy. And at that time, I started working in a functional neurology clinic and I was learning about hormones. And I was like, oh no, this is really not healthy for me. Like, as you said, like, there are some people that love it and feel inspired by it and can do it. And I learned that my physiology, I'm just not one of those people. So I need to step back. And that's kind of what brought me to this work.
And I think, it's like the physiology, but also the mental aspect and the emotional aspect as well. I know I had similar stuff happen in terms of losing my period. And again, it was like I knew that wasn't like healthy, right? Like we were learning about the female triad or the female athlete triad in my undergrad. So I knew, but at the same time, it almost was that weird badge of honor of like, oh yeah, like I'm so lean. I have such low body fat that I don't have a period now. And looking back, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like that was so crazy because we know the implications on bone health and things like that of not having a period because you don't have enough body fat and how unhealthy that is. But also, then you have the outside kind of societal pressure of people are praising you. Oh my gosh, you look great. I'm so jealous. Gosh, you're just so disciplined. I could never be that disciplined. And all of those things, if I'm being completely honest and transparent, were definitely like filling a part of, I mean, it was stroking the ego for sure. And it was also giving like my top love language is words of affirmation. So it's like that was like totally filling that love cup, even if it was also kind of like on the back end, sort of perpetuating more unhealthy habits and relation, the relationship to food and exercise and my body. I definitely did not compete as long as you. I did two shows and was really thinking about continuing on to go towards that pro route. And the year before I competed, we went to the Olympia in Vegas, which is, if you're not familiar with that and you're listening, it's, I mean, it basically is like the Olympics of the bodybuilding world. And so it was so cool to meet all of these women that I was looking up to and different things like that. But yeah, so it was like I was really like thinking, okay, this is the path that I want to take. I want to get my pro card. But there was always kind of this little piece, I think, inside of me where I was really uneasy with the amount of time that I was thinking about food, right? It was like I was always either thinking about when I could eat next, what I could eat. There was that aspect. And then really, I think even noticing, because I had both of my kids at the time I was married, how much time was going into thinking about myself and thinking about the sport, you know? And I was like, I could see like, yeah, if it was just me, that would have been different. But definitely, I think even for people that are single or don't have kids, when that so much of that time and attention and energy is focused on ourselves, especially something, I mean, I hate to say it, but something as small as what our body looks like, it hinders our ability to really live life and like have relationship with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does. And that was my experience also when I was in college too. I trained through college. This is like the time that I competed, and I didn't really feel like I could form those deep relationships. I remember a specific instance where all of my friends were going out to In-N-Out Burger. And I was like, oh shit. Like I already ate, like I was counting my macros. I was like, no, I can't have that. Like, I'm like so like rigid on this diet. Like I was like, I went back and forth and it was so uncomfortable because I just wanted that social time with my friends. But I felt so much anxiety come up around the fact that we were gathering around food that it actually hindered me in spending time with friends. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like you said, like even with single people, so much time goes into themselves. And I was in college too. Like it was like, I was at the gym at 6 a.m. and then I was in school all day. And then I would sometimes do another training session in the evening. And then I was making food for the next day and then going to bed. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really leave a lot of time for deepening social relationships. And that was something that like, it was a great sadness to me. But then again, like you say, Alicia, like I had this badge of honor of being like the most disciplined person that any of my friends knew, right? And I was the most fit person. I was always the person that people were going to ask questions about fitness, and all of that really fed my ego.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, I mean, to kind of switch gears, it is interesting. So I think kind of being on the other side and really looking at lifestyle change truly as a lifestyle. So for me, a couple of years ago, that was kind of that diamond moment where, you know, I have over, I don't know, 10 years, 13 years experience in the fitness industry. I have my degree and was still feeling like I was kind of always on that start stop cycle. Like I could do something and be really good for like 3 weeks. And, you know, I always use good in sort of the air quotes. And then I just remember standing in the kitchen one day and just feeling so defeated, so deflated. Here I am like taking progress pics again, and just really feeling like, oh my gosh, like why if this is a healthy lifestyle, does it feel so hard? And that was when I heard kind of that deep, small, quiet inner voice that was like, it's because you've been dieting this whole time and calling it a lifestyle. And so that was pivotal for me. And oh my gosh, like, yes, I have. And so I want to kind of switch gears now to talk about some of the parallels that we see within kind of mainstream fitness culture. It seems like it's kind of shifted to really want to emulate the lifestyle and really that mentality around like body, like the bodybuilding figure bikini competition world. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes. I mean, there's like, those are my thoughts. I scroll through my Instagram. I follow a bunch of other fitness influencers. And one of the big things that is really being pushed by influencers right now is to count macros. Mm-hmm. And that is not sustainable for most people. And then the refeeding process, also not super sustainable. Like we can do it in our menstrual cycle naturally because we have more appetite at certain points in our menstrual cycle, right? So we can actually eat more food, but those two things are two things that I don't think are good. We can go through every diet, keto, veganism, mm-hmm. like paleo, like all of these things that are being pushed by health influencers. I don't think they're actually sustainable. And I don't think that they're actually, quote unquote, healthy ways to live, personally, if I could just throw my opinion out there.
Please do. So definitely with the macro counting, that was kind of the last straw for me, is it was like, oh my gosh, like all day long, yeah. I had this running total in my head of protein, fat, carbs. Okay, how much is in this? How much is in that? How much is in that? And so much of my mental energy was just spent on that alone right there. And while I do think that macro counting has its place for particular goals, most specifically professional athletes, people that literally get paid to work out, to recover, to eat a certain way, to win medals or win competitions, right? Like it is their job to make sure that their body is performing in peak shape, right? However, for most people, macro counting is not necessary to, you know, be in a weight that is good and solid and healthy for your body. And for a lot of people, it does create that disordered, stressful relationship to food. And I think you could argue the same for calories, you know, anything like that. The other thought that I have about diets, right? I always like to look at it as it's a diet as in a verb, or it's a diet as in a noun. So if you want to choose vegetarianism or veganism or keto as a lifestyle, awesome. But we need to remove the diet mentality that drives the behavior of restrict, 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 and then binge. And I'm not sure if refeed you meant cheat day, because that's a whole nother tangent that I could go on. Where it was like, you were good all week long following your diet or your macros. And then you have a day where it's just like, oh yeah, this is my free for all. Like I can just eat whatever I want. And that definitely perpetuated that diet cycle of binge, restrict, binge, restrict.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see that I've experienced that also. And when I feel like in my weight gaining period where I got, where I gained like 30, 40 pounds in 3 months, like I feel like it was definitely that cycle happening until I was like, okay, Omega, how about let's try this out. You can eat whatever you want. And switching my mindset from like, oh, you have to lose weight. You're really not doing good, to you can eat whatever you want. My body finally got out of this like fight or flight state and was able to develop that homeostasis. So I think the most dangerous part about any quote unquote diet is that our body gets in this fight or flight state and our body isn't really its best. Like it affects us down to the chemical level when we are in that fight or flight state. So I think that's really the most harmful part about using diets as a verb. That would be the verb, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, okay. I'm doing this, but it's very much fueled by what I call the diet mentality, right? Mm-hmm. There are good and bad foods. I have to, I'm being good. Oh, I'm being bad. Oh, I can only eat these things. I can't eat these things, right? I can only eat X number of meals a day. I can only eat every, 2 to 3 hours, or only between this time and this time. And all of that stuff, right? I do remember that. So it was when I decided, okay, I have to figure out how to make this a lifestyle and not just a diet masked as a lifestyle. One of the first things was giving myself that mental permission, like, okay, you can eat whatever you want. And that feels really scary because during that time where I was really heavy dieting, I felt like I was completely out of control around food, because it was like, I could be really disciplined and really controlled as long as I was on plan. But then I had that mental vacation, if you will, on the cheat days or the refeed days. So it felt like I couldn't stop myself, right? It was like, oh my gosh, I just have to get it all in. So initially it was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be kind of scary if I don't have any like rules to live by. But ironically, there was so much less stress and pressure almost immediately just knowing that whatever I want, I could have, and I can have as much of it as I want to, that really did allow me to start to kind of slow down and be like, okay, so like, why am I eating this? Let me actually taste this. Do I even like the way that it tastes? Not really, yeah. But I'm eating it just because it's here. Like, wow, that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the boiled chicken.
Oh my gosh.
The boiled the smell of boiled chicken is just so.
The part, the one that still gets me to this day is tilapia.
Oh my gosh, me too. Salmon, like it took me years to eat salmon again and asparagus. I have this like distinct memory. Like I think I was a week out from a show, and I was sitting outside of class, and I was eating cold salmon, unspiced, gross salmon, and cold asparagus, and just like trying to chew it and trying to like swallow it down. And I was like, this is awful. Like, I can't do this. And that was the only time I actually strayed from the diet that was put out for me. Cause I was like, hey coach, like I'm having trouble swallowing food. Like that should be the first sign that like, we don't actually want this. And he was like, okay, like how's chicken? I'm like, I can do chicken. And so yeah, those food traumas are real.
Yeah.
Sweet potatoes too. It took me a while to want sweet potatoes again.
I definitely had some aversion to any sort of eating out of Tupperware or like meal prepping for a little while, because I was like, okay, I'm so burned out on this. Like I just couldn't, you know? So I was like, okay, I'm just going to eat whatever leftovers. But now I see that really and truly like cooking some turkey patties or burger patties or rice or something like that ahead of time. Again, it's the mindset shift, because I don't have to eat these things. However, it does make a really easy lunch, right? Put some rice, mm-hmm. grab one of the patties, put some salsa and avocado, throw some veggies together. I don't have to think about what I'm going to eat, which is so helpful. This is definitely going off, but it really does help with that decision fatigue, right? It's like when we're constantly having to make decisions all day long, that's when you get to the end of the day, you're so tired that you're like, I'm just going to grab whatever is available. Again, not even because it's what you want or because you like it or because it makes your body feel good, but it's like, this is basically the only thing I have capacity for. So definitely just trying to set ourselves up ahead of time, I think, is huge. But again, it does come back, I think, to the heart that's really driving the decision.
Yeah.
So you mentioned there are certain parts of our cycle where our body can kind of tolerate or handle a little bit more food. I'm really curious about that, because I think that was around the time that you were talking about those refeed days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I would be curious to know, like, you know, how do we kind of get in tune with that part of our cycle, or what does that even look like tangibly for us?
Yeah. How do we get in tune with it? Like, we pay attention, and the easiest way to pay attention is like, when is my period and what days am I feeling what thing? And when I teach this stuff, I say that these are the ABCs. These are our actual body cues. And the actual body cues that we can be given is like more hunger. And usually that happens about 2 weeks to 10 days prior to our period starting in our luteal phase. And there's actually been lots of studies on this, that our BMR does increase. And not only that, but we're actually burning different things. So we actually have an increase in amino acid metabolization. So we need more protein during this time. We also use more vitamin D during this time too. And vitamin D has been linked to more depressive and anxiety episodes prior to our cycle. So if we have things like anxiety or depression, we know, okay, more vitamin D. Same with magnesium. Magnesium is one of those things that definitely gets metabolized rapidly prior to our cycle, but is also one of the first minerals that we lose in times of stress. So not only just getting more calories in any form you want, but also getting more calories from things that our body actually uses more of at this time is crucial.
And I thought that I had heard too, or read in an article, that in that luteal phase, we are also generally able to tolerate carbs a little bit better as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. And we can tolerate carbs better. Are you meaning like a glycemic load?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, that is true. And we also use more fat in that phase of our cycle too. So like in terms of like eating carbs or eating fat and thinking about a workout, again, not overthinking it, right? But like eating foods that we feel called to and then using it for fuel for our workout can be really, really great. So we actually burn more fat during this phase of our cycle. And a lot of us feel the feeling of like, gosh, I just don't feel good prior to my period starting. I'm losing all motivation. This is your permission to like take down the exercise intensity, because we're actually like pushing ourselves is no use at this point, because we really don't have the hormones, estrogen and progesterone, at the capacity that helps us build muscle tissue, build and repair muscle tissue.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it true also during this time that cortisol levels go up as well in that luteal phase
leading
to your bleed?
Yeah,
totally. So then doing like the high intensity or pushing a really hard workout, you're actually doing yourself a disservice, because your base cortisol levels are already higher. And then you factor in stress from life, if you're running late, if you forgot something super important, and then you want to add like an intense, stressful workout on top of that. I mean, you're really just against yourself there.
It's totally counterintuitive, because as you and I know, like stress is catabolic. Stress is going to eat muscle tissue ultimately. And muscle tissue is the thing that if we're trying to work out, that's the thing that we're trying to get more of. Right. And so pushing ourselves in this phase is just not the way.
Mm-hmm. So it's funny. I'm actually in my luteal phase right now. I think I'm about, I don't know, between 6 and 8 days out from my estimated next start date. Mm-hmm. And I was noticing like yesterday a little bit, and even today, not as much as I feel like I remembered last month, but feeling a little bit like on edge or just kind of anxious.
Yeah.
It's been kind of gray here. So I had my vitamin D and I was like, oh, I just need to take a couple. I know it's totally placebo, because I'm like, it's not going to get into my body and then just immediately like kick in, but it makes me feel better.
Totally.
But then, you know, I am noticing today where it's like, oftentimes I can go, you know, my sweet spot seems to be about three and a half hours between meals. It's like, that's kind of when I start to get hungry again. But I am noticing today, it's about every 2 hours. So it's definitely like more frequent that I'm feeling that sensation of hunger. So it is really interesting.
Yeah.
When I was dieting and when I was in that bodybuilding space, like body attunement, being aware of any of this stuff just isn't even possible, because you really are eating and working out for a specific aesthetic. Like this is definitely simply aesthetics. This has nothing to do with health necessarily. This has nothing to do, well, yeah, with health or longevity. It is, you're eating for an aesthetic goal, that you are just looking at how can I manipulate my body so that it looks a certain way. And sadly, I think that is the mindset that I see in the health and fitness space. It's sometimes it's masked under the guise of being healthy, but when you really peel it back and clients feel guilty because they can't push themselves as hard, or they get hurt, but they're like, but you know, like, I don't know that I can take that time off. It's like, okay, there's something else happening there, right? So it's like to really kind of separate the, I guess, just like understand the why behind the behavior. And so I don't know where I was going with that, but that is really the mentality that I see in the diet space and the fitness world right now.
Yeah, I mean, even if you take something as simple as like glute growth, right? We're manipulating the body, and we have to ask a big booty is great. We all love a big booty, but we have to ask ourselves, are the big booty exercises and how we're eating, is it sustainable? And to what end will we do these things? Are we are we engaging in health practices because we want to be healthy and we love the lifestyle? Or are we engaging in health practices to serve our ego? Mm-hmm. And I think a little bit like, of course, I'm going to work out every day because I love it. And if I miss workouts, which I did last week, I don't really feel my best. Like my digestion changes when I don't get enough movement in. And I think it's important that we look at how our workouts affect us and what we feel drawn to, like what gives us joy in working out. Because like, I love lifting weights. I love doing yoga. Some people are like, oh my God, I can't do workout equipment. I have like my partner, he has to be outside, like hammering things and building things in order to like even think about exercise. Right. And so we're all different and we have to pay attention to really what gives us joy. And that will guide us into knowing what is sustainable for us.
I guess that was the point that I was trying to make, is that the more that we're caught up in the dieting and doing things the right way, or trying to do it perfectly, or simply exercising or looking at changing eating patterns or behaviors purely for a physical goal of like losing weight or losing body fat, we can miss those cues. We can miss the signals that our body is sending that it's maybe not at its healthiest or it's not functioning optimally. And where when we kind of can take some of that pressure off of ourselves of having to look a certain way or be a certain number on the scale, that really does open the door for us to slow down, to get in touch with our body, to understand what kind of exercise maybe we're naturally inclined to at different times of the month, what kinds of foods we're sort of craving. And then really, you know, it's like, it's just being in that tight-knit relationship with your body and with yourself, that you really are doing these things because you want to take care of yourself, because you do truly love yourself, right? That doesn't mean you have to love everything about the way that you look, but it is having that like deep, genuine care and concern and love for yourself. And then understanding, I think at the end of the day, like my heartbeat is that our purpose in this world isn't to decorate it with beautiful bodies. Like there, you just have so much more to offer the world than what you look like. And I think sometimes we can just lose track of that and we can become so single focused on looking a certain way or being a certain size that we don't have the time, we don't have the capacity, we don't have the energy to actually really live into that purpose.
Amen, sister. Amen. I lived it. You lived it.
I was like, oh my gosh, what am I doing with all of this time and energy and brain?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. And once we get away from that, we can like, it's just such a contrast how I live now, how I eat now, how I share food now, how I make decisions now, how food can be this communal thing in our household versus like, I'm eating this like boiled chicken and broccoli and like you're fending for yourself, you know? Yeah.
100%. Well, Omega, is there anything that you feel like you need to say that you haven't said yet?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think, you know, I think you preach this a lot, but like go out there and love your bodies and get curious about your bodies and pay attention to the cues that your body has to give you, because really, truly, your body does know. Your body does know what's best for you. And it takes deep listening that can sometimes at first be really uncomfortable and challenging. But then once you get the hang of it, like you are a master of your body and you can live your life so much more fully.
Yes, I love that. Well, Omega is somebody that I personally learn from when it comes to our cycles and exercise and food and those kinds of things. So we will definitely be sure to have her Instagram in the show notes, as well as I'm assuming your website. Is there any other place that you want to send people to connect with you? You can share here, but we'll for sure put all of that in the show notes.
Yeah, YouTube as well is where I share my most educational content, especially for personal trainers who are looking to assess, address, and correct their clients' hormones and just become masters of hormones within their own scope of practice.
Yeah. Okay. We will have all of those show notes. So be sure that you go and stalk her in those places.
And yes.
If you're interested in learning more about working with her, then definitely do connect with her as well. Thank you so much, Omega, for spending some time with us, sharing your story, and coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Alicia. It was really good to do this deep dive with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for tuning in and listening. I hope you have a fantastic rest of the week. Please consider sharing this episode with somebody who might need this message, who is struggling with some of the stuff that we talked about. And if you love what you are hearing, do consider leaving us a 5-star review. That helps put the show in front of more women who are ready to break up with dieting, heal their relationship to food, exercise, and their body. So thanks again for tuning in. We'll be back next week.